The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Well, with a new government finally coming together almost 5 months after the general election, this is a pivotal point in determining how we move forward as a country after the most intense period of tackling the virus sweeping the globe. There's been lots of speculation about how the pandemic will change society. To look at how some of these profound changes might play out, here we're joined by Fintan O'Toole, Irish Times columnist, Áine Kerr, co-founder of Kinsin, and Breedh Horan, co-chair of Balance for Better Business. You're all very welcome to the programme. Áine Kerr, if I could go to you first. A lot of people feel once we come through this pandemic, and we're not through it yet, but eventually when we get through the far side, that things will be different. All will be different. Do you subscribe to that view?
Yeah, absolutely. And in the words of W.B. Yeats, all change changed utterly. I think people have gone through a moment of reset, a moment of correction in their professional and personal lives. And I've had so many people say to me, there's no going back. And I think, you know, our workplaces of old was very much a premium on face-to-face time and rigid work schedules. And we're now moving into an era where we're going to see a preference for really a virtual workforce and a real mindset shift when it comes to having blended work experiences where you may spend some days at home, some days in an office, because you sometimes want to be in an office for that physical connection. But I think for a lot of workers, the opportunity to finally work remote has given them a new level of productivity, a new opportunity to practice the ruthless prioritisation that we all talk about. And crucially, for a lot of people, the most stressful point in their day is sometimes, whether you're working in a city or commuting to a city, is the commute. And you suddenly remove the commute, which it stresses people out before they even get to their workplace. You suddenly have a new re-evaluation of that blended experience. So I would say, when we think about our workplaces, to the positive of the last 4 months' experience, I would say people are potentially less stressed about commuting and childcare. Now employers, they can attract a broader pool of talent. It's easier potentially to retain, particularly millennials, who put a premium on the opportunity to work remote. And for a lot of people, they feel now they're carbon neutral in some respects, and they're contributing to their environment. Now, that's not to say there aren't negatives in this new moment of a reset. You know, it is harder for employees to switch off. They're probably working longer hours in some respects.
We can get to some of those, I think, as well. Fintan O'Toole, at this point, people are talking about how things will be different and will change in many ways. Is that just going on in our heads, or do you think it will happen?
I think it will happen. You know, historically, what tends to be the case with, you know, large existential crises like this, like wars and plagues, you know, it's not so much that they transform things. It's just that they dramatize and speed up changes that were probably already happening. And I think I completely agree with Áine. I think this is, in a way, what we're seeing, right? So it's not that remote working, for example, is a new thing. Some of us, unfortunately, are old enough to remember when, you know, 20 years ago, people were saying, we're all going to be working from home in 5 years' time, you know.
And the commutes,
oddly enough,
the commutes just got longer.
Systems are very conservative, yeah. Sorry.
And the commutes just got longer, Fintan, despite
people thinking
it would happen 20 years ago.
What happened was, we just continued. Human societies are funny things in a way. There's a sort of inertia, you know, we just kind of carry on with things. Samuel Beckett has a line about habit is a great deadener, you know, and we've been deadened by habit. And I think what this crisis, which is horrific in so many ways, and we have to remember, you know, that we're not being upbeat about it. It's about grief and it's about loss. But it does dramatize, I think, the idea that we're suddenly paused. We have to rethink. Just physical space has to be rethought, you know, where we work, but also how we interact with each other.
But just
like
on
simple
that
things like footpaths, for example, can't work anymore. So, you know, that means you can't have as many cars. That means you have to recenter the whole idea of the city around people and how people move.
Yeah. Breedh Horan, when it comes to looking at how we do things differently, if you reflect back on the lockdown and everybody, a lot of people working from home, couples, parents, how do you think things have changed in that way? What are the challenges? I mean, the first one, I suppose, that comes to mind is around gender. Has it been the same experience for mothers as fathers?
No, indeed it hasn't, Richard, and thanks for the invitation to be here today. I think before I'd say anything, I'd like to just recognise the fact that we're talking about the future. We're not out of the crisis yet. I think we're still involved in a very large experiment, which unfortunately has had really tragic implications for people who've lost family or friends, and indeed people who are still ill, and people whose jobs are in jeopardy. So there's a lot of effects that we're not going to talk about in this discussion, but I don't want to leave them unmentioned. In terms of people working from home, it's really interesting. Fintan's absolutely right. This is an acceleration of a trend that was already happening. I was already meeting mainly women who were perhaps living outside of Dublin, coming to their offices maybe 2 days a week, but working from home. So technology has been a great enabler. But it's really interesting to see this large-scale experiment. So the organisations that were already leaders in terms of this agile form of working, and a lot of them were doing it in order to promote gender balance, which we in Balance for Better Business really welcome. But those leading companies were able to adjust very quickly. But it was really interesting to see how quickly other companies caught up. Now, the experience of people working from home has not been the same for men and women. And this is not just an Irish phenomenon. We have lots of research. So, for example, the New York Times did a major piece of research, and, you know, 47% of fathers working from home felt that they were doing the bulk of the schooling for their school-aged children. 3% of women agreed with that conclusion. So there's an unequal balance of childcare.
That's a massive disconnect. 3% of women agreed with the conclusion that half of men came up with.
So there's a misperception. Now, what has happened, and I think Fintan picked this up in an article in the Irish Times last Saturday, really good article about fatherhood. And I know this from my own family. So one of my sons has a year-old child. He's been working from home. When his wife went back to her job, which actually is in healthcare, he's been juggling childcare, and they've been juggling it between them, obviously, working longer hours in order to accommodate the needs and pleasures of being at home with a one-year-old. But his experience has been really interesting in that he went back to work after paternity leave and was quite sad to have to leave his child so soon. So very much as Fintan outlined in the article last week, fathers have had the opportunity to be at home. So many of them are actually having a lot more time with their children and benefiting from that. It's interesting, the CSO, the Central Statistics Office here in Ireland, did some research about people's experience. And there were two things that were really stark for me in the research. One was that of mothers and fathers who were newly working from home, almost a half of the women said that they would like to return to their workplace when restrictions were lifted. And it was only one third of the men. And I think that reflects that imbalance that is still happening in the childcare. So there's other research that shows, for example, that women working from home tend to have 1 hour uninterrupted work time compared to the men having the 3 hours. So the ratio is way out of kilter. So yeah, the childcare still kind of is falling back.
And that's an interesting point as well. On your care, when it comes to, let's say, if there are children involved at home and getting attention and they're looking for attention from whom, if this is going to form a new long-term pattern, now I know in many cases childcare will be back and they'll be going to school, but is this potentially a bit of a backward step for women, do you think?
Yeah, I have genuine concerns when we look at a lot of the research pre-COVID and in COVID, as Breed has articulated there, that if we're not careful, we could revert to the type of gender roles and imbalances that belong to the 1950s. And I think that's where we have to stay in this state of heightened awareness now, because some of the conditions that women and people from diverse groups as well experience pre-COVID, they're going to become more exasperated, because at the beginning of COVID, we had this cliche of COVID-19 is going to be the great equaliser. Well, it hasn't been, and it won't be unless now we're prepared to make some fundamental changes. So we look at historic research that women, you know, perform the bulk of unpaid work. We know statistically in Ireland, women earn 14% less than average men. We know it's going to take 200 years to close the gender pay gap, according to the World Economic Forum. So some of the preconditions pre-COVID are going to become exasperated unless now we think about legislation, support mechanisms, childcare policies to ensure we are putting women at the centre of how we think about the future of work.
And Fintan O'Toole, there is another issue talking about inequalities. When you look at younger people and the challenges that may be ahead from all of this for younger people, or those from poorer backgrounds as well.
Yeah, you know, I think that's an absolutely crucial point to make. You know, Anya's absolutely right to say, of course, that it hasn't been the equalizer. You know, well, we know this is always the case, isn't it, that crises are always going to hit the most vulnerable people worst. It's hit the young. You know, I think you have to feel enormous sympathy for people who are, if you're around 30 or 32 now, right, this is your second major economic catastrophe in your working life, you know, and this is really difficult for people, you know, and they need enormous support. You know, this is the state is going to have to take responsibility for, you know, trying to sustain a reasonable kind of career path for younger people. But we also have to recognize, I think, that children have been disproportionately affected by it, and of course unequally affected by it. You know, it's the kids who are most in need of school and of the supports that come with school, you know, are obviously the ones who are going to fall behind. So look, where all this leads us is really towards the fact that I think, you know, we're talking on the morning when we have a new government just about to be formed. It's going to have to be an even more radical government than it thinks it is, I think. Sustainability, environmental change, transport change, all of that sort of stuff is going to have to be at its heart. But for the foreseeable future, I mean, for a number of years, I mean, government is going to be absolutely central to sustaining some sense that we are all in this thing together. We've been through the crisis together, but we're also going to have to be through the recovery together.
This will be our wartime cabinet to some extent, yeah, then, Fintan. But yeah, of course, all of that's going to cost a lot of money. The plan seems to be that in the short and perhaps the medium term, we're going to have to borrow that. Bree Choran, when you look at the challenges that are there ahead for the economy, for creating work, the last time, in the last recession, when we were examining ourselves as a society and the mistakes that had been made that got us into the mess, we talked about what would be different and what might be different. Economically, foreign direct investment probably came to the rescue to a large extent in the recovery. And tourism as well took off, and we reached record tourism numbers. What's going to work this time?
Well, I think, as Anya said, there's a real need for heightened awareness on all our parts. So as individuals, we're now called on to be much more conscious of everything that we're doing in terms of how we move about. But Fintan has talked about the policymakers and government. I think equally, businesses and companies can really make a very strong contribution here. And as can all our higher education and our educational institutions. So I think Fintan is quite right that this will affect different cohorts differently. And I'm conscious, I'm involved in DCU, for example, and we're very conscious of the people, the young people who are transitioning into higher education at the moment. And we did some research, actually reached out to 1,000 students at that stage in their life. And what they're concerned about is being able to establish connections. So I think every element of society needs to actually consciously address what they can do. So in the previous crisis, for example, my former employer, ESB, hired extra apprentices and actually accelerated kind of programs, took apprentices in who hadn't completed their apprenticeships elsewhere. So I think every organization needs to look at how they manage their own people, how they have a culture that actually is inclusive, that remote working is definitely part of this. And it's called out, I think, almost 20 times in the programme for government, remote working. So while we need to manage that carefully to make sure that the women or men who avail of that are fully integrated into the organisation and have the same career opportunities as anybody else, but equally it's a huge opportunity. That's an opportunity for young people who might want to live their lives differently, who instead of, like me, the automatic choice to get a job when I grew up in Moat was to come and get a job in Dublin. There will be opportunities now for people to actually stay close to where they have grown up and to have really good careers. So if we approach it right, I think it can be really positive.
But and everybody can make a contribution, whether they're a business or community group or community themselves. But Anya Kerr, I was talking to somebody I know who works in the City of London in a very big 40-something story building, and there are 11,000 employees in that building, and they've looked at the social distancing measures so that as people return, in order to comply, they reckon they can fit 900 into that building that normally has 11,000. And the question is, how many of them will actually ever go back to working in that building? How do you see the changes taking place? It isn't just, not everybody's going to be able to work from home. We have one text in here from Geraldine. She says it's very well for those with fibre broadband to talk about that, but we don't have it yet.
Yeah, and there is a massive moment of re-evaluation. I think a lot of companies are taking now a people-first approach and actually talking to people one by one to actually understand their preferences and their individual circumstances. I do think for a lot of people who found themselves over the years saying, I have to live in the city, I need to commute those 3 hours a day from Cavan, Monaghan, Louth, Kildare, places like that, they're revisiting those life choices now, because it turns out all of these essential reasons that we had for being in offices are actually non-essential. And so I think a lot of people are revisiting fantasies that they might have had of living a country life, that that can actually now become a reality. And imagine if we can provide that option. To your point, Richard, it's not going to be for everybody. There's simply going to be some services and roles and responsibilities that require you to be in place. But where you are a technology company, you can be removed from an office and adopt a remote first policy and maybe have a hot desk in the city. There's going to be extraordinary benefits to local economies. People are going to have greater disposable income. They're going to have an increased quality of life. So there is an opportunity to revisit, but it is going to be incumbent on employers to have those conversations with their employees, but also to anticipate the negatives. Like, we do know that it is very difficult for people sometimes to switch off. We do know they will actually work longer hours. They'll not sufficiently rest. People are actually more likely to work when they're sick, when they're in remote work. And we also know it is just harder sometimes to have that ideation and brainstorming that can happen more organically in a workplace.
We are talking to some extent about remote working. Fintan O'Toole, I read, for example, that Facebook is talking about globally, internationally, how in the future around half of their staff may well end up working remotely. But if you move to a lower cost area, if you move to Wyoming or Montana instead of San Francisco, they're going to pay you less because it's cheaper to live there. So we inevitably get into the realm of the attitude of employers and businesses and what this might mean for rural communities and the urban-rural divide.
Absolutely. I think the key thing here is you know, and it's the same with every big social change, is who benefits. You know, what we've seen broadly speaking since the early 1980s is that the bulk of the new wealth created by the technological revolutions, of course, has gone to the top 1% and the top 1% of the 1%. This time it has to be different. You know, the benefits, and I mean both the financial benefits, but also the social benefits, you know, have to be widely spread. If this is simply a way for giant corporations to exploit people in new ways and save money on offices and everything that comes with it, it will be a disaster. It has to be managed in such a way that the benefits are going into the vibrancy of communities, going into to increasing the quality of people's lives, and also into remembering that, you know, it's very important we're talking about, there are huge numbers of people who will never be able to work remotely. And they're mostly people who are already poorly paid. They're the people who are in the sort of gig economy jobs. They're the, you know, you just look at the number of people who are you know, gathering outside any restaurant in any of our cities at the moment, waiting to deliver orders. You know, think about the supermarket workers. Think about, you know, the physical jobs that people still have to do. All the care workers, all of that sort of stuff is never going to be remote. And they also have to see some kind of benefit out of this sort of change, at least some respect. You know, this use of the term unskilled workers, I think, has been really exposed throughout this crisis. But we've realized how vitally we depend on people who are often not given a second thought.
And so, Bree, just want to bring you just breach here finally, briefly. I mean, I know Fintan O'Toole has talked about it before there, but the psychological impact on people of all of this, and the suggestion that perhaps a national day of mourning for those who have died, and a sense that as a society, we are coming through and going through something very difficult.
I think we do need to realise that. And again, it's interesting, from the CSO research, the gendered impact of that is quite different. So their research, I think, was done in April. And it showed that, you know, from 2018, the life level of satisfaction, the general level of satisfaction in the population, there were about 10% of both men and women had a low level of life satisfaction. By 2020, that had gone up for women to about 40% and about 20% for men. So again, that gendered effect. So I think people are feeling this very differently. And I mentioned at the beginning, those people who've lost family and friends, that's absolutely a huge issue. But I agree. We need to market, but we need to move forward then in a very intentional way. We need to make sure that we don't lose the kind of initiatives that companies were taking. The solution will vary company to company. It'll vary, as Fintan says, job to job. It'll vary person to person. And for different people, it'll vary time to time. And we need to, I think, manage people as individuals in a much greater way than we perhaps have done before. People are very different. They bring different strengths, different talents. And just finally, if I could say, I would have great confidence that Ireland will come out of this well, because I think we have a very talented workforce in all kinds of roles. And we've seen that talent and that commitment through this crisis.
On that very positive note, Bree Horan, Fintan O'Toole and Áine Kerr, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.